Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Welcome to Hard Currency, the Financial Times podcast on the week's events and moves in the foreign exchange market. I'm Roger Blitz, and the week has been dominated by the Chinese renminbi, which has been going through the type of decline that seriously spooked markets a few years ago. This time, some timely words from the People's Bank of China, its central bank, has stabilised the currency's fall. But what happens if the currency resumes its decline? And in Euroland, after some upbeat data and talk about the European Central Bank perhaps having hiked or talking about hiking rates too late, could the euro be about to rally once again? Well, with me to discuss all this is Stephen Gallo, Forex strategist at Bank of Montreal. Stephen, let's start with the renminbi, the falls. Let's talk about the causes. What's behind this fall? Is it accumulation of factors?
Our best judgment, based on things that we look at, the way that the PBOC behaves towards setting the dollar CNY mid-rate, a number of other factors, our best judgment is this has been a largely an orchestrated move by PBOC. It probably has something to do with the rhetoric on trade coming out of the U.S. It may have a little bit to do with the slowing Chinese economy. But let's just rewind for a moment and think about this in the context of what happened in 2015. In 2015, the deceleration was probably more marked, and the weakness in asset prices domestically in China more significant. And whilst this was going on, capital flows automatically started to leave the country. So effectively, PBOC lost control of the currency then and had to let it go. This time around, we're led to believe that restrictions and oversight on outbound flows are tighter, and the deceleration probably has not been quite as severe, the deceleration that is in China's growth. So we think the move is largely orchestrated by them, but that's not to say that there aren't risks here.
So, Stephen, when you talk about the PBOC orchestrating it, are they orchestrating a fall in the renminbi because of its worries about the Chinese economy, or is it really the trade tariff issue?
I think the important thing to understand about China is that the credit cycle and growth are largely managed themes in China. So they're managed by the authorities. They have control over the credit cycle. They usher in periods of deleveraging and releveraging. Right now, China is probably on balance, or they have been in a period of deleveraging. So when you throw the trade situation into the mix, it's potentially a very bad time for them. We have to think, number one, if we're China going into these negotiations where they'll probably have to make concessions to the U.S. anyway, do they want a very strong currency when they do that, or do they want a little bit of a weaker currency? Probably they want to go into the discussions with a somewhat weaker currency. And the interesting thing about it, and you know, on this theme of orchestrated move, is if you look at the dollar RMB, dollar CNH, it stopped basically at 670. Yes. So that's their line in the sand in dollar RMB. And if you look at the trade-weighted RMB, in late May, it was up about 3.5% year-to-date. It's now flat year-to-date. So they've orchestrated the move away from 670 just as the trade-weighted RMB was going flat for the year. Okay. So that suggests to us that, you know, they're looking at these levels closely.
Okay. Is it working, or is it too early to tell? What did you make of the market's reaction to it? And actually, the way that the PBOC communicated it, sure, which was quite a heavy verbal intervention operation.
Sure. I would say verbal intervention, the market got the message, and dollar RMB backed away from 670 nicely. The issue for China, like most emerging markets, is that there's going to be a period when the authorities can control the exchange rate the way they want it, and there could be periods where they're not able. In the case of an emerging market, any economic agents or citizens that have access to foreign currency will go and convert their domestic currency into that foreign currency if they think the government is going to seriously devalue. And that's the point where the currency starts to run away from the central bank. We're not at that point yet in the RMB, and I think that's why they've had some success in pulling dollar RMB back from the 670 level. So, but the point is, we could get there.
So it's not like 2015, 16. There's better protection from the PBOC. But in terms of, do you think that the market is going to try and challenge the PBOC? Do you think hedge funds might try and short the renminbi? Or is the market not minded to? The market would rather see a calm renminbi in terms of broader issues.
Right now, as the move back down towards the 660 area and the moderation in RMB weakness this week suggests, right now PBOC is in control of the exchange rate. So if they wanted to flush out speculators now who are shorting it, they'd have more success. If they had let this go a lot further in a very short space of time, they might have lost that leverage. Right now, I think speculators will lock and load again, and they will be going long dollars versus the RMB. As we head towards the U.S. midterms and as we head into these negotiations between China and the U.S.
Okay. Let's look at the euro. Donald Trump is in town next week in Europe and in the U.K. Or is that the same thing? Did you think that the better data that came out of Germany this week, the factory orders, is kind of what we expected, and that the market can now start a push higher against the euro? Or are there countervailing factors inevitably, such as the Fed position on rates and also the jobs story, which we're going to hear about on Friday morning?
So our view is that the reaction in the dollar and the weakness in European currencies in Q2 has largely been an overestimation or an extrapolation by the FX markets about the soft patch that was evident in Q1. Yeah. There was clearly a soft patch in global growth and European growth in Q1. But what I think, and you're alluding to this as well in your comments, what I think the PMI suggests is that still, growth is pretty much at the global level and in the European level, it's pretty much intact. And it paves the way, in our view, for central banks besides the Fed to continue normalizing policy. And we still think, despite this strength that we've had in the dollar in Q2, that is going to be the bigger story for the next 12 months. The Fed is getting closer to the end of its cycle, and other central banks are converging towards the Fed's monetary policy stance. They're not necessarily going to match it with their level of rates, but when you see a central bank like the ECB all but committing to ending outright purchases and now even starting to debate the timing of the first rate hike, I'm sorry, you can't call that central bank policy divergence. That's convergence.
Okay, coming into that a bit more detail. Obviously, we had Draghi last month saying, yes, we're going to go down this route, but we can't see us raising rates until Q4, perhaps, of 2019. And we had this story out on Wednesday about actually maybe some policymakers saying, you know, maybe that's not soon enough. Did Draghi get his communication wrong with the market?
He intervened verbally and changed the language around enough that he knew he was not going to get a stronger euro. I think he probably got more euro weakness than he bargained for on that very day, and which is why at Sintra and since Sintra...
Right, this is Portugal, the gathering of central banks.
Correct. Since then, you've generally seen eurozone policymakers not trying to magnify the impact of his move. What does that mean in sort of layman's parlance? They're trying to park euro dollar slightly above 115. Yeah. They don't want a lot more weakness now. But if you look, I mean, just look at the facts. Look at how flat the Euribor curve is already. Look at how flat the OIS curve is already. If anything, the risk there is that we have to start thinking about the timing of the first rate hike being sooner, not later. And that's euro supportive. Yeah. We still think heading into year end, for various reasons, politics being one of them, the euro is going to remain below 120. But we think the evidence increased. There's increasing evidence that it's starting to stabilize at around these levels, call it 115, 117.
And it's ratcheting up elsewhere, isn't it? I mean, we had the Riksbank, you know, being quite hawkish on
Same
inflation
thing.
At the beginning of the week. We had Carney being quite hawkish, read the BOE.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Next week, we've got Bank of Canada, have we not?
Is
that also likely to keep the move towards higher rates going?
Yeah, we think so. And by and large, we think the Bank of Canada's view on NAFTA is that there are risks there, but they don't really know how to quantify these. And in the meantime, their models on inflation, wages, slack, spare capacity are telling them you need to be normalizing policy. And so we think they move in July. They have a window. Similarly to the BOE. I mean, you see a similar wage and price dynamic in the UK, tightness of the labor market. Q1 was a bit of a rough patch, but we're seeing evidence that it was temporary. Yeah. They need to normalize when they have the window. Now, in the BOE's case, August may very well be the last window of opportunity they have before the Brexit clock really starts to get into its final hours. So
effectively, just to conclude, Stephen, we're on, in terms of policy normalization, we're pretty much back to where we were at the start of the year.
Right.
What's happened is effectively we've lost 6 months or so because of this slowdown, which is actually not great. You know, I mean, central banks, you know, don't have all the time in the world to get rates above, you know, this zero bound range. It's perhaps what we can we conclude that actually central banks have been just not brave enough, too cautious, you know, too reliant on some pretty difficult data that was temporary.
Definitely difficulty in parsing through the data and reading it and trying to get an accurate assessment of what's going on. But as far as the FX market's concerned, let's not forget the rally in the dollar in Q2 was partially caused by those central banks, those very central banks trying to resist dollar weakness. And now I think they've had a little bit too much dollar strength in the opposite direction. And so you're starting to see, well, you've been seeing them continuing to show markets that, look, the path is clear. We want to normalize.
They want a perfect world, and they should have been braver, perhaps. And my thanks to Stephen Gallo of Bank of Montreal. This time next week, who knows where we will be? Will the UK government have fallen apart over Brexit? Will Donald Trump upset the NATO apple cart? Will he get a hostile reception on his visit to the UK? Will football really be coming home? The anticipation is killing me. Join us again for Hard Currency. Until next week, it's goodbye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Here at Bellingcat, we get to the bottom of things. From a global crisis to an underreported event, we find the facts using publicly available tools and resources, uncovering what is hidden on and below the surface. We connect the dots using social media posts, satellite images, and public records, and empower others to do the same by sharing how we do it. The ability to do so is only made possible by our readers, supporters, and community members. Care to join us? Learn how at bellingcat.com.